explosion. Combined with the sharp, shattering sound of the lantern striking the ground, it was disorienting, so much so that Stonewall's eyes betrayed him. Despite being ready for the brilliant display, he saw a shadow dancing in the trees above, as though alive, and before the light lost its powers, he swore the shadow was looking back at him. Stonewall's hand went to the revolver on his hip, but before he could drop it, a shrill scream pulled his attention back to the Union soldiers.
"Good Lord, it's come back for us!"
Stonewall knew it was a man screaming, but it sounded closer to a coyote's shriek. The cry was followed by a cacophony of gunshots. An angry buzz stung his cheek, and something heavy tackled him to the ground. Remembering the living shadow, Stonewall struggled against the weight until Goose's voice was warm in his ear.
"It's me, General."
A different kind of shouting followed the barrage. Men begging for mercy while others demanded submission. Stonewall noted the annoyance in Goose's voice as his subordinate helped him up.
"Trying to remind yourself that you're not invincible?"
"I'm fine," Stonewall said, brushing the previous autumn's soggy fallen leaves from his jacket.
"You're bleeding?"
Goose poked Stonewall's cheek, the touch eliciting a hiss of pain.
"Gonna need a stitch or two."
Any other man who spoke to Stonewall in such a manner would find himself on the front lines of the coming day's battle. But Goose had earned the right. In the midst of this war, he was the closest thing Stonewall had to a friend. While he commiserated with esteemed men like Robert E. Lee, he couldn't just be himself. But Goose truly knew Stonewall. His fears about the war, his love for his wife Mary, and for his newborn daughter Julia. He wanted little more than to be with them now, safe in their house, warm by a fire. It was why he fought with such ferocity. The sooner this war ended, the sooner he would return to them. "The scar will suit me," Stonewall said, and then he turned his attention back to the small clearing, which had gone silent. He stepped past the fading light with Goose and Gator, the two men wary for trouble. They were miles from both Union and Confederate camps, but there was no telling who else lurked in the woods this night. The three Union soldiers were on their knees, bleeding from fresh wounds, no doubt inflicted by Cotton, Johnny Boy, and Cracker Jack. The men had been savaged, but Stonewall was impressed his men hadn't killed one of them. Then again, most of their wounds appeared to be at least a few hours old, the blood dried and the bruises a deep purple. Only one of the three looked up at his approach. The man was young, mustached, and wearing an officer's jacket. Their leader, and by the looks of him, a coward. His hands trembled, his eyes twitched, and then eye contact. The man's face showed recognition, and then something Stonewall was not expecting. Relief.
Stonewall? The man asked. Thank God.
A Union soldier thanking the good Lord for the appearance of General Stonewall Jackson the night before a battle was set to be fought, or on any night for that matter, should have been unheard of. Yet here Stonewall stood, looking down at a bloodied Union man all but ready to kiss his feet, like he was Jesus Christ himself.
"Name and rank, son," Stonewall said.
"Captain Jason Ames, sir."
"Sir," Stonewall noted.
The respect wasn't just customary. It was sincere. But was that the fear talking? Or was it possible that his reputation as a cunning leader had earned the North saw? If that was true, it boded well for the morning's confrontation. There was no weaker brew than an army steeped in fear.
"What are you doing out here, Captain Ames?"
Stonewall asked. Cotton drew a fist back, ready to clout the man. But Stonewall stopped him with a raised hand. He saw no resistance in the captain's eyes. The captain searched the trees surrounding them. The two men with them hadn't stopped doing the same since Stonewall first looked upon them. Stonewall followed the man's gaze up to the branches, where the shadows had danced. The lantern's spilled oil still burned, but the light was fading. They had just minutes before complete darkness returned.
"Captain Ames?"
Goose prompted, keeping the conversation on track.
Same as you, I suppose. Scouting the... Look at him.
The man to Ames's right said. He was pointing at Stonewall, who hadn't yet looked away from the trees.
He's seen it too.
Stonewall glared at the man. Seen what?
Was a demon,
the man said.
Lucifer himself.
The second nameless Union man added.
Bigger than the lot of you. Faster too. Glowing eyes. Killed 9 men. We're all that's left.
Ain't no surprise there, Johnny Boy said. You Billy Yanks got about as much brains as you do. Johnny?
Stonewall said, silencing the man. Then,
Captain, you telling the same story?
It was a man,
Ames said.
But he was alone. And big.
And he killed 9 of your men?
Stonewall's raised eyebrow revealed the statement was a question rather than a repetition of facts.
Yes, sir.
And where are they? The bodies?
Taken,
Ames said, eyes turning to the ground.
Where?
The captain turned his head upward. The trees were cloaked in darkness once more. The oil nearly burned out. Ames pointed up.
No way it's just one man, Gator said. I reckon we.
A sound like a woodpecker pecking on a tree trunk thumped out of the canopy overhead. Ames and his men flinched at the sound. They'd clearly heard it before and associated it with nothing good.
That him?
Ames nodded.
We should leave. Only place you're going is a Confederate prison, Goose said.
There were few horrors on earth that could compare to the deplorable conditions prisoners of war faced in the South. Starvation was rampant. The only thing that stopped its slow degradation of a man was cannibalism. These men had to know as much. Conditions in the North couldn't be any better, but Ames and his men seemed almost eager to meet this fate. When a second woodpecker beat out a rhythm just above their heads, Stonewall's entire crew reacted, raising rifles toward the darkness above.
Can't see shit,
Cotton said.
Ain't nothing up there,
Gator added, but he kept his rifle raised. Goose began stomping out the last of the flames covering the ground behind them.
Stop,
Ames said.
All you're doing is blinding us.
Goose kept stomping.
A man can't shoot what he can't see.
He...
Ames shook his head.
Sees just fine in the dark.
Doesn't sound like a man to me,
Stonewall noted, one hand on his holstered revolver, the other on his sheathed saber.
Goose, light another lamp.
Are you taking us back?
One of the Union men asked, his voice full of hope. But Stonewall shook his head.
Not yet. We still have a mission to complete.
We'll tell you everything you want to know,
the second Union soldier said.
Ain't no way to know if you're telling the truth,
Goose said. All three men seemed to melt from the inside out.
Aw,
Crackerjack said.
Maybe we can convince old Johnny Boy's mom to wet nurse him back to...
A crunch of leaves and twigs at ground level slipped out of the dark woods. Rifles shifted toward the sound. Stonewall's men were putting on a good show, but he could sense they were spooked. Hell, he was spooked. But no one was leaving this forest until he knew what kind of danger awaited his army.
Show yourself!
Goose shouted. He raised his rifle and looked back to Stonewall, who gave a nod.
Near as I can tell, you've done us a favor. Come out now and we can part ways as friends. You make me wait any longer than a count of 5? Well, I think what's coming is pretty self-explanatory.
Gator, Johnny Boy, and Crackerjack stood on either side of Goose, a regular firing squad. Cotton stood behind their prisoners, no doubt hoping the men would attempt to flee. Stonewall counted down in his head. When he reached 0, Goose followed through on his promise, firing toward the sound's source. The others did likewise, shooting and reloading, again and again, striking trees and brush, but failing to elicit a shout of human pain.
Hold!
Goose said, lowering his rifle. He turned toward Johnny Boy.
Go see.
To his credit, Johnny Boy snuck away, disappearing into the woods. He would soon return with news of their failure or success. Stonewall flinched when something bumped into the back of his leg. He looked down to see Ames shuffling backward, a look of abject horror carved into his face.
Cotton?
Stonewall said, about to chew the man out. But then he turned around. Cotton stood at an angle, dangling over one of the Union men. What looked like a harpoon jutted out from his chest, through the Union soldier's head and into the earth. As the life leaked out of him, Cotton's eyes met Stonewall's, pleading.
Goose,
Stonewall said, drew his pistol, and shot Cotton in the forehead. The moment his men spun around and caught sight of the horror, the harpoon withdrew, tugging the Union man's head against Cotton's chest. Goose aimed his weapon at the pair of dead men.
What in tarnation?
They're lying out the back, Gator said. Somebody gone fishing.
As though to prove Gator's point, the pair of dead men were yanked forward and then up, into the trees, where the shadows danced, and where someone continued the hunt he had begun with Ames's men. 4.
Bejeebers!
Crackerjack shouted as the skewered man flew up into the night. He spoke over the top of his raised rifle, looking for a target but finding nothing. Whatever had killed and taken the men was impossible to see, but it could be heard, crashing through the branches, moving away.
What kind of man could pull two heavy fellas up into the trees like that?
That's what I've been telling you!
The nameless Union man shouted, his voice cracking with panic.
It's the devil himself! Swooping down on us like a roaring lion, eating our souls!
When he leapt to his feet and bolted, no one stopped him, and Stonewall didn't ask them to. Ames had all the intel he needed, and the runner was clearly a coward who would be of no use in the fight that was surely to come. But when the man shrieked and then gurgled in pain, all eyes turned toward him. He stumbled backward out of the dark, hands on his throat, blood oozing from his fingers. Crackerjack and Gator raised their weapons and would have opened fire had it not been for Stonewall's raised hand and shout,
"Hold!"
A moment after the command, Johnny Boy stepped into the clearing, wiping his blade on the bleeding man's arm. The Union soldier then succumbed to his slit neck, fell to his knees, and then on his face. When Johnny Boy looked up, he saw the looks in his comrade's eyes. Then he froze.
What did I miss? Where's Cotton?
Up there,
Gator said, nodding his head up.
In them trees?
General,
Goose said, doing his best to hide his fear.
Your orders?
The only reason Goose would be asking for new orders was if he truly believed Stonewall's last orders, to reconnoiter the enemy camp, to be folly. Given Cotton's sudden demise and strange disappearance, Stonewall had come to agree with Ames. They were being hunted, but not by the devil. By men. And men could be killed. Stonewall pointed to Ames.
Give him a weapon.
Goose looked stunned and then complied, returning the man's belt, which held a holstered pistol and a saber.
Fight with us tonight,
Stonewall said.
And if you survive, you have my word that you will be returned to your men unharmed following the morning's battle.
After Ames had tightened the belt, he accepted a rifle with a nod.
I'm with you.
Actually, Stonewall said, we're with you. Lead the way.
Ames' eyes went wide.
To the Union encampment?
That is why we're here, and the cause for which my man gave his life. I intend to see it through, no matter the cost.
Even if it's your own life?
Ames asked.
This war is going to kill me sooner or later, and I'll be damned if it happens while I'm running from a fight.
As he spoke the words, Stonewall's stomach soured. He didn't want to die. He had a wife and a newborn daughter to live for, and he loved them more than a man at war could admit without going AWOL. But he wasn't a coward, and if he died fighting the enemy, then at least his wife and child would be proud of him. He pointed north.
Now,
After you. Gator took the lead with Ames, holding a torch that blazed brightly in the night. If darkness didn't hinder the man attacking them, he wasn't about to face them blind. Goose walked beside Stonewall, while Johnny Boy and Crackerjack brought up the rear. They walked just 10 minutes in silence before Gator took hold of Ames and yanked him to a stop.
Smell something.
He raised his nose to the air. Sniffed.
Dead men. Is this the way you came?
Goose asked.
Where your men died?
Ames shook his head.
Proceed,
Stonewall said.
Slowly.
Gator crept forward just another 20 feet, Ames hanging back a few steps, and then he stopped again.
Body up ahead.
The group tightened and proceeded together. The details were hard to make out in the dancing firelight, but they resolved with each step closer. Two bodies hung upside down, dangling from the trees above, naked of clothing and skin. Their heads and spines had been torn away. Fluids tapped a rhythm on the forest floor, leaking from opened bodies.
Holy shit,
Crackerjack said.
That cotton?
Johnny Boy asked, tapping his rifle's muzzle against the open wound in the corpse's chest, right where cotton had been run through. Crackerjack gave a nod.
Looks like it.
Stonewall knew what the others were thinking, because he had the very same questions. How could their heads and spines be ripped out? How could two men be stripped of their clothing and skin inside of 10 minutes and hung directly in their path? It didn't seem possible. It didn't seem human. The woodpecker returned, taunting them from the trees. Leaves shook overhead. From another direction, the voice.
Mama's milk.
More shaking leaves. With every new sound, the group shifted their aim, waiting for a target.
He's playing with us,
Stonewall thought. He glanced at Ames, who passed him a look that said,
You should have listened to me.
Stonewall didn't argue. A sound like wood crackling in a fire was followed by a whoosh that Stonewall heard and felt. Something sailed past him and struck Crackerjack. The big man was lifted off the ground and slapped against Cotton's corpse. As Crackerjack's voice rose up in a scream, a crisscross of lines appeared on his face, squeezing the side of his head, and then cutting into it. Blood erupted from the conjoined wounds. His clothing fell away, small squares of neatly cut fabric revealing the same crisscross wounds all over his body. He was ensnared by a tightening net, squeezing his body against Cotton's. As Crackerjack's scream reached fever pitch, Stonewall drew his pistol once more and shot the man in the head.
I'm getting tired of shooting my own men,
he shouted.
Show yourself, like a man. I want to know who's killing me before I die.
Stonewall had no intention of dying, but he couldn't very well fight someone he couldn't see. He hoped the taunt would do the trick. It didn't. But when Johnny Boy whispered,
See him. His eyes, at least. Watching us.
He raised his rifle, looking over the sights. Then he turned hard left and fired. The rifle's report was followed by an angry roar. The sound of it made Stonewall doubt his resolve once more. The roar, like the physical feats they'd seen performed that night, wasn't nearly human. 5.
Got that sumbitch!
Johnny Boy shouted, as the branches overhead shook. Then he flinched, raised a hand to his cheek, and smeared his fingers across it. They came away wet and luminous green, like he'd smeared firefly guts across his skin.
What the fu-
Johnny Boy's confusion, and body, were cut short by a spinning metal disc. It came and went in a whoosh, leaving the stricken man still and silent. Then he fell to his knees, and the impact loosened his severed head. Blood seeped from the wound and allowed the head to slide free and thump to the ground in time with his body. Gator, unfazed by the recent violence, crouched down by Johnny Boy's still confused face. He didn't even flinch when Johnny Boy blinked. He just swiped his finger through the green smear, smelled it, tasted it.
That blood. Stonewall slowly drew his pistol.
He'd lost 3 men in under 20 minutes. Johnny Boy had managed to wound their adversary, but the bright green blood confirmed what Ames's men believed, and what Stonewall had begun to fear. They weren't being hunted by a man, or even by a group of men. It was that devil himself that had come for Stonewall Jackson.
"Lord Jesus," he said, praying aloud as he did before every battle, "see us through this trial. Give us the strength of Samson and the wisdom of Solomon. Guide us through these woods to safety and spare our lives. Your will be."
Stonewall stopped. He finished every prayer the same way. "Your will be done." But God's will was a tricky thing. It might be for the greater good, far outside the grasp of mortal men, but it didn't always line up with human desires, even those of good Christians. So instead he said,
"Please don't let the devil kill me. Amen."
Finished with the prayer, he realized his compatriots were staring at him, Goose whispering his name. His real name.
"Thomas."
Nothing more needed to be said. It was time to go. Goose just needed a direction. Stonewall turned to Ames.
"Closer to the Union lines?"
Ames gave a nod.
"By a few miles."
"I have your word that we will be returned safely to the Confederacy come first light?"
A second nod.
"On my life."
"Lead the way, fast as you can."
They ran through the night, guided by Ames's sense of direction and a lone torch. Just 10 minutes on, Stonewall's lungs begged for respite, but he didn't believe, not for a moment, that the hunter had given up. Certainly not after being wounded. Ames stopped, hands on knees, chest heaving as he caught his breath. Before Stonewall could smack some sense into the man and get him moving again, the hunter bellowed in pain. The roar sounded similar to a man having a bullet pried from his body. It was wasting no time tending to the wound. He had little doubt it would pick up their trail soon enough, but at least the noise spurred Ames back to running. After another 10 minutes, their pace slowed considerably, but they didn't stop. Stonewall felt a surge of hope. The forest up ahead was framed by a dull light, a clearing. The Union forces wouldn't be too far beyond. Gator must have seen this too, because he picked up his pace and said,
"Almost there!"
He hit full speed in 5 steps, then came to an abrupt halt, as though he'd run into a wall that wasn't there. Tiny streaks of what looked like lightning crackled from the point of impact, moving up and down, revealing an immense and inhuman form. Gator fell back, rolled head over heels, and returned to his feet in a crouch. He looked up at the revealed enemy.
"Is a Gator Man."
He drew a long knife from his hip.
"Like me."
The fearless alligator hunter lunged, blade swinging in a wide arc. The devil reached out and caught Gator's face in its palm, but the man managed to complete his strike, swiping the knife across its midsection. The blade didn't sink deeply enough to eviscerate the beast, but it drew more luminous blood. Whether or not the creature had even noticed the wound, Stonewall couldn't tell. While much of its reptilian-skinned body was exposed, it also wore a strange kind of armor, which included a sinister-looking helmet, or at least, what Stonewall hoped was a helmet. He had never seen or imagined anything so horrible in all his life. But he wasn't yet hopeless. This creature could be injured, and that meant, he hoped, that it could be killed. With a shout muffled by the creature's large, clawed hand wrapped around his head, Gator drew his knife back, preparing to thrust it into the thing's gullet. But he never got the chance. The beast twisted its arm, spinning Gator's head 180 degrees, cracking his neck. At the sound of Gator's snapping vertebrae, Goose opened fire, first with his rifle, and then his revolver. Every fired bullet was a perfect headshot. Had he been aiming at a man, there would be little left of his head. But this creature was far from a man, and its silver helmet deflected the barrage, showing only slight dents in the metal. Goose saved his last round.
It's like shooting an iron plate.
The creature turned its glowing eyes toward Goose, as though merely annoyed by his assault. The woodpecker growl made Stonewall's hair stand on end. It was the only part of his body able to move. Then the creature's shoulder came to life as a strange third appendage, like a malformed arm made of metal, snapped into place. A triangle of red lines cut through the dark, emerging from the side of the creature's helmet, creating red spots on Goose's chest. Goose took aim at the creature's torso and pulled the trigger, just as a burst of blue light exploded from its shoulder. Stonewall flinched away from the light, and the heat it threw off. He looked back in time to see Goose thrown against a tree, his body scorched. The creature stood still, looking down at its wrist, where a crackle of orange light revealed the damage caused by Goose's final shot.
"Sir?"
Goose groaned, reaching up. The front side of his clothes were burned away. His skin was red hot, cracked, bleeding, and steaming, like a roast pig.
"Give me your pistol and go."
Stonewall didn't want to leave the man. He'd rather put him out of his misery first, as he had done for Cotton and Cracker Jack. But Goose might be able to buy him precious seconds. He looked up at the sound of rustling leaves. Ames was beating a hasty retreat toward the forest's edge. Stonewall didn't know if the man was a coward or just smart, but he decided it didn't matter. Running was the only sound option left. He handed his pistol to Goose, who winced, as his raw fingers wrapped around the pistol.
"Go,"
Goose said, teeth grinding.
"Make it back to your family."
Those final words propelled Stonewall after Ames without another word. He followed the faint orange light of Ames's torch, hoping the man knew where he was going. The clearing loomed brighter ahead. And then a gunshot rang out. It was followed by three more.
"Two more shots," Stonewall thought. "He has two more."
But the only sound that followed was a gut-wrenching scream that somehow seemed louder than the pistol reports. Stonewall stumbled to a stop at the forest's edge, torn between living and loyalty to the man he had left behind. Then the devil screamed at him from the dark woods, and Stonewall sprinted away, running into an open clearing miles across, where his army would fight, kill, and die the very next morning, and where he suspected he might do the same before the sun could rise. 6. Out of breath and more afraid than he would ever admit, Stonewall stumbled to a stop in the field's core. He was surrounded by tall, yellowed grass, undulating in the night's breeze. The stars blazed overhead. Had he been with Mary and Julia, his thoughts would have been on the beauty of the Lord's creation. Instead, all he could think about was the devil, set loose to torment him. Like the biblical Job, but more personal. He stood in front of the only sign of Ames he had seen since the man fled the forest. The man's torch stood upright in the field, like a beacon, and it had drawn Stonewall straight toward it, expecting to find Ames resting or waiting in ambush. But all he found was the torch, casting a 30-foot ring of orange. He was about to curse Ames when he heard a shushing behind him. Someone or something was moving through the grass. He turned slowly, having little doubt about who had followed him into the clearing. The devil emerged from the darkness, standing tall and bold. Luminous blood leached out of its sliced stomach and from two fresh bullet wounds, one in its thigh and one in its shoulder. Neither seemed to slow the creature down or cause any discomfort. Either shot might kill a man on the battlefield, from blood loss, perhaps, but more likely from infection. He didn't think either would be a problem for the beast. Stonewall drew his second pistol.
What are you?
Three red dots hummed from the creature's helmet. The weapon on its shoulder targeted him. The result of a shootout with this creature only had one potential outcome, Stonewall realized. Goose was a better and faster shot than Stonewall, and he hadn't been able to put this creature down. If Stonewall pulled the trigger, his fate would match Goose's. Stonewall lifted his sidearm out, and then released it, letting it fall to the grass. The monster cocked its head to the side, and then relaxed. The three red lights flickered off. With a clucking growl, the devil unclipped its armor and shed the weapon mounted to its shoulder. Then it loosened the helmet and peeled it away with a hiss of fog. Stonewall took a step back as the helmet lowered. Then four more when he saw its face, stopping only when the torch's heat licked up his back.
Lucifer, Stonewall said, in the flesh.
He drew his saber, the long, polished blade glowing orange in the firelight. Gathering his courage, Stonewall shouted,
In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to—
The creature leaned forward, opened its muscular arms wide, and bellowed. The hot, stinking breath clouded around Stonewall, somehow both hotter and more humid than the thick, early summer air. With a metallic zing, two jagged blades extended from the creature's right forearm. It reached behind its back with its left hand and withdrew a razor-sharp disc, its fingers looped through five holes. Stonewall recognized this as the weapon that had severed Johnny Boy's head. It still held a thin coating of his blood. The monster hunched in an attack position and began circling. Stonewall spun in a slow circle. His blade was longer than the creature's, but its long arms still gave it a longer reach. And he couldn't outmuscle it. But perhaps he could outsmart it. The way he saw it, his only hope was to make it strike first, hopefully dodge the blow, leaving the creature overextended and vulnerable. It was the same tactic that guaranteed victory against the Union during the upcoming battle. But would it work against a predator such as this? After a few moments, the creature stood upright again, its horrible mandibles twitching as its eyes looked Stonewall up and down.
It's reassessing me, Stonewall thought. It knows I'm trying to outthink it.
With a flick of its wrist, the devil sent the metal disc soaring off into the dark. The only evidence it hadn't flown away was the whirring of its blade through the air. The weapon was circling them. When the sound grew suddenly louder, Stonewall ducked with a shout. The blade soared past overhead.
It's controlling the weapon, Stonewall realized. As long as I'm not fighting, I'm vulnerable. It's forcing me to engage.
So he did. Stifling the urge to let out a battle cry, Stonewall lunged forward, stabbing out with the saber, hoping to sink the blade into the devil's chest. But the strike was parried by the creature's bare hand. Stonewall swung the blade, adding desperate fury to the strike. The sword sparked off the monster's armored wrist. He swung again, aiming low for the femoral artery, but he had no idea if the creature could even bleed out. The top half inch of metal tugged through thick hide, leaving a 2-inch slice. Encouraged by the small victory, Stonewall raised the saber over his head and hacked down, aiming for the devil's shoulder. The sword came to a jarring stop that nearly pulled the weapon from his hands. The demon had caught the saber between the two blades extending from its wrists. With a quick twist, the saber was sheared into three pieces and yanked from Stonewall's hand. He stumbled back away from the predator. His heels rolled on something hard and he fell to his backside. Looking down, he saw his pistol resting between his legs. He snatched it up and began a slow crawl backward, away from the torch and the monster it lit in hellish orange light. Then a voice rolled over the open field. It was faint, but recognizable as Ames, and clear as the sky above.
Grapeshot!
Stonewall's eyes widened. Grapeshot was composed of metal balls, the size of large grapes. When fired from a cannon, they could devastate an advancing infantry or cavalry. With a sudden clarity, Stonewall understood the torch's purpose. In the dead of night, it was a target, working in the same way as the creature's red-dotted triangle. Backing up further, Stonewall adjusted his course, drawing the creature into the fire's light. Cast in the monster's shadow, Stonewall waited. The creature stopped again, peering first at Stonewall, and then the flame behind it.
It knows, Stonewall thought. It's going to move.
He raised the pistol and fired. The bullet struck the creature's side, snapping its attention back to him. He aimed higher, but heard the familiar whirring blade swooping in from the right. He flopped down onto his back, just as the blade cut through the space where his head had been. He raised his hand to fire again, but the boom that filled the night was much more powerful than his pistol could manage. Luminous green burst into the night, covering Stonewall from head to toe. He wiped his eyes clean. The devil stood above him, its body ravaged by grape shot, its head shredded into two halves. Stonewall rolled to the side, narrowly avoiding its falling body. As he stood, a voice.
You need to go!
Ames, on horseback, was carrying a canister of liquid. The young captain slid off the horse and handed Stonewall the reins.
I made you a promise I intend to keep. Now go!
We can't let anyone know about this, Stonewall said. No one will fight if they think the devil makes his home here.
Taking care of it,
Ames said, sloshing liquid onto the body. Recognizing the smell of kerosene and the sound of approaching men, Stonewall climbed atop the horse.
If we meet upon the battlefield, I will not hesitate.
Ames smiled, picking up the torch.
Then I will do my best to avoid you.
As the devil's body was turned into an inferno, Stonewall kicked the horse into action and rode into the night, taking a direct course through the forest where his men had died. He rode on without ceasing, feeling the devil's claws reaching for him in the dark. He didn't slow down upon reaching the far side, or when the Confederate lines came into view, or even when he heard men shouting for him to stop. What stopped him was a bullet, fired from his own men. Stonewall lay in the grass, looking up at the sky, thinking of his wife and daughter, listening as his men shouted about the glowing green man, and he watched as a streak of light rose up out of the forest and winked up into the stars. Thomas Stonewall Jackson died May 10, 1863, from an infection caused by a bullet put in him by his own men upon returning from a reconnaissance mission. The exact reason his men fired on him remains a mystery.
Rematch by Steve Perry. Something is wrong. The old sense hadn't been active much. Only a twinge now and then since the disaster in Alaska 9 years back. But it was here, now, as strong as it ever had been. Something is wrong. Danger. Death. Sloan didn't pause. He kept moving, took the turn that circled the big oak where the old deer path veered into the woods. Birds chirped, but he didn't hear anything else save his own breathing and soft footfalls. Somebody was out there. Who? The bikers? From the meth lab set up in the old RV parked by the pond deeper into the forest? Nope, not them. Those clowns tromped through the woods like a herd of rhinos. You could hear them a mile away. It was stupid dangerous, but no, not them. It was an overcast Oregon summer morning, and he was still a little stiff. These days it sometimes took 20 or 30 minutes before he worked the kinks out. Back in his heyday, he'd slogged through the jungles of Vietnam carrying a full backpack, extra ammo, his rifle and scope, 50, 60 pounds of crap, and he could come out of a dead sleep, ruck up, walk 10 miles without blinking, set the sight, and center-punch Charlie from 500 meters with a cold shot. He'd been good at his job. Long gone, those times. Had a birthday coming up, with a big number in the front, and a zero following that. And he lost a step or two. Somebody was watching him. He knew it. He didn't want them to know he had any idea they were. The path descended a little, weaving into the scrub fir and alder. Usually the mosquitoes weren't bad this time of morning, and he had planned to get 5 miles in and be back before Mary got up. Not now. Now he needed to cut his walk short and get home, where he had resources. It had been a long time since he felt the need to carry a gun. He had a pocket knife, a little ZT tactical folder clipped inside his jeans pocket, but it wasn't a serious weapon. It had a 3-inch blade. As a forest ranger in Denali, he had slung rifles that could hit hard enough to stop a charging brown bear the size of a small pickup truck. Necessary there, not here. These days, he saw squirrels or rabbits, and there didn't seem to be any bears locally, not even the little black ones you could shoo away by waving your hat. He was good enough in the woods that he should have been able to spot a casual stalker, and he couldn't. But he knew they were there. Bad. And he knew why. They were back. The killer aliens who had stalked him and Mary back in Alaska. The ones whose mysterious presence had been hushed up by the government, even though they had killed more than a couple of people. And if they were here, it was because they had come looking for him. Too much of a coincidence otherwise. He had killed some of them, and they had tracked him down years later to repay him for it. No discernible reason to believe it, but that's what it was. Every step he took, he expected one of those energy bolts the predators used, waited for it to spike and burn a fist-sized hole through him, be dead before he hit the ground. He made the short loop and headed home. They didn't shoot. Why? The hairs on the back of his neck settled as he left the woods and headed toward the house, the sense of being watched fading. It was them, but they didn't kill him. Why not? Mary was up, dressed in her old blue flannel nightgown, scrambling eggs in the black skillet. Still gorgeous at 55, best thing that had ever happened to him, despite how they'd met. Her dead brother, the killed bears, the creatures. He walked past the kitchen, straight to the junk room's gun safe. He twirled the dial, opened the heavy door, and pulled out his mega beast, the short-barreled custom in .610 GNR, and loaded it. One round, falling block, based on the Ruger number 1. Only one round, but a solid hit would stop a charging elephant dead in its tracks, punch a hole through a brick wall. From the kitchen, Mary said, "Babe, what is it?" He pulled the BFR from the safe and loaded that, too. 5 rounds of .500 max. He felt better. He could hit back now. Mary came down the hall. "Sloan? What?" "They're back," he said. "Oh, shit," she said. No need for him to say who. Nakande churred absently to himself. "What?" Vagauti said. "This is the sniper. He is old. He moves slowly. Not even armed. Two of us? A child could take him."
"Looks can be deceiving. You know what he did. It is why we hunt together."
He nodded. "Yes, yes. It was well known and often told, the story. A hunter of hunters. The Uman. Fragments of recordings have been sent back to the ship when it happened, enough to tell the tale. But look at him. He dodders. The victory would be hollow. The trophy, meaningless. All the interstellar travel for this?"
I would stretch a little, she said. He looked at her. The Wield House, with the great stink. They are all armed and young. He nodded again. It would be good to stretch. What are we going to do? Call the law?
Sloane shook his head. And tell them what? More of the alien space critters who look like Wonder Warthog and who killed a bunch of bears and people in Alaska 9 years ago have come to call? They'd lock us up, if they could get here in time.
The feds know about them?
Yeah, but which feds? And how long would it take for them to put a black ops team on the ground here? I don't think we can wait.
She dressed, put on her jeans, laced her boots, shrugged into a flannel shirt.
We run, he said. Pack the truck and go, far away and fast.
How did they find us?
He shook his head. I don't know. They have spaceships. They have superior technology. Doesn't matter. They tracked us down.
You think they came to kill us?
I do. I don't know why they didn't take me out in the forest.
You were unarmed. That wouldn't be sporting, would it?
He looked at her. Of course. The predators took on giant brown bears using only their blades. No real hunter would get any joy from shooting a sitting duck. They wanted prey who could fight back. He had demonstrated that well enough. Okay, here's the deal. We grab the go-bags. When we get to Portland, I'll drop you off, you get a room, and I will—
No,
she said. You aren't going to draw them away from me. We live together. If we die, then we die together.
Mary, not open for discussion, Sloane.
He grinned. Well, never any question she was as good as they came. Far too good for him.
She said, if it took them 9 years to find us, maybe we can throw them off our trail longer, now that we know they are looking. New names, new place.
Sounds like a plan, he said. But when they went to open the pickup, all four of the tires were flat, shredded, and that vehicle wasn't going anywhere. Well, shit, he said.
Harvey banged his shoulder on the frame of the fucking RV as he went out the door. Again.
Fuck, he said, without any particular anger. Happened all the time. Narrow-ass door, and him being 6'6 and 275. He scratched at his bare chest. The new 88 tat itched. Fucking tattoo artist must have had a dirty needle. Thing was more than 2 weeks old, and it still itched. Ought to be worth a discount when he got the next one. He walked to the big Douglas fir tree, unzipped his crusted jeans, and pissed on the bark. Damn toilet in the RV was stopped up again. Martin was supposed to have fixed it, but Martin liked his own product too much and was stoned most of the time. From behind him,
I need a new valve to fix a crapper.
Speak of the devil.
What, I'm your mother? Go and fucking get one, Harvey said. Money, dude. I ain't got no cash.
Look in the drawer next to the sink, right where it always is. Should be plenty.
Oh, yeah, right.
Harvey shook his head, tucked his package away and zipped up, turned to look. Martin was on the skinny side, all the crystal, but he was still buffed. Liked to hit the iron, habit he'd picked up in the joint, and he was passing strong, but getting mush-brained.
What was that? Sounds like a giant fucking squirrel.
Harvey looked around. He pulled a cocked and locked .45 tucked into his back pocket, thumbed the safety off. "'Wasn't no squirrel,' he said. "'We got company.' Martin reached inside the doorway and came out with the Savage 12-gauge pump. He said,
"'Hey, Bo, wake up!'
From inside, Bo said, "'Why?'
"'Visitors!'
Martin stepped down, shotgun pointed ahead of him. After a second, Bo emerged, buck naked, hairier than Bigfoot, carrying an Uzi.
"'What? Cops?'
"'I don't think so,' Harvey said. "'They would have been all over us by now. "'Might be some competition looking for free product.'
"'I'll give them some free buckshot,' Martin said. He laughed.
Harvey was looking right at Martin when there was a flash, a loud sizzle, and a hole just appeared in the middle of Martin's gut.
"'Motherfucker!' He pointed the .45 at the woods and cranked off rounds as Bo started to hose the trees with his Uzi on full auto. Bo screamed, and Harvey looked over to see Bo's arm get blown off. Sloan heard the gunfire, a distant echo. Pistol, full auto subgun, two shooters. "The bikers," he said. "We need to get out of the house. We know the woods better than the aliens. We'll use the ghillie suits." Mary nodded. In his unit, cruising, Mac got the call from Loretta.
"Mac, we got a report of shots fired out toward Crown Pond."
"Copy that, dispatch. Bikers are probably target shooting again."
"You want me to get Charlie and Arnie to meet you there?"
"Nah, the bikers know better than to screw with us. I'll check it out. If I need help, I'll call you."
"Be careful, Mac. They're probably drugged up. No telling what they might do."
"I hear you."
"Little sport here," Nakande said. "Target practice."
"They were inept," his mate said. She shrugged. "But they were what was available. Better than nothing."
"We didn't come all this way to slaughter such poor prey."
"The day is yet young," she said. "Shall we go find the sniper?"
"Yes, and with hope he still has some of his former skill."
He didn't believe it, though. Sad. Been a long time since he'd worn a ghillie suit, but it was like riding a bicycle. Still smelled like moldy canvas overlaid with cat pee. He smiled at Mary as she zipped up her suit.
"Are you laughing at me?"
"A little bit, yeah. You're cute." "Well, you would be if I could see you." She grinned back at him. "Which rifle you want?" He was taking the Beast and the BFR. Extra ammo, a big sheath knife. He wished he had some grenades. A rocket launcher, a tactical nuke. "The Winchester 308.
"Sidearm?"
"No. Anything big enough to stop one of them would probably break my wrist."
"Ah, you're tougher than you look." She glanced down at the suit.
"Right now I look silly."
"Well, yeah, a little bit. Silly gilly." Mac could smell the burned meat when he rolled up on the trailer, and he saw the bodies quick enough.
"Jesus Christ!"
"Loretta, send Charlie and Arnie. Call Sheriff Perkins. Call the state police and tell them we got a SWAT team out here."
"Mac?
I got three biker corpses. Look like they were killed by death rays. We got big trouble here."
Vagauti said,
"The dwelling is quiet."
Nakande nodded.
"Yes."
"I see no signs of life. I cannot hear them."
"The vehicle is disabled. They cannot have left."
She stared at him.
"And how did we come to be here? Do you think their legs are disabled, too?"
He shook his head. She had a barbed tongue, his mate, and never did she let him forget it. Fortunately, she had other virtues. An excellent hunter, she was.
"I will go look," she said.
"I can do that," he said.
"One would think so. Nonetheless, I will go."
He shrugged. Not worth the argument. It wasn't long before she returned.
"They are gone."
"Well, they are on foot. Probably armed. We can hunt them. More sport that way."
"Yes." "Sloan, do we have a plan?"
He nodded. "Yeah. We work our way through the forest to the bikers' RV. They have a truck and motorcycles. We will borrow a ride."
"You think they're dead?"
"Bet on it."
"After that?"
"One step at a time. If we hear pursuit, we'll take cover and knock 'em over."
"If we can see them."
"There's that. But we did it before."
"We barely survived."
"Barely is better than not at all." Mac should have waited for backup, but the place was as still as a tomb, and whoever had slaughtered the three bikers had to be long gone. He unracked the shotgun and chambered around. Not that doing so made him feel a whole lot better. He saw a .45 pistol, an Uzi, and a 12-gauge pump next to the dead men, and enough expended brass to see they had gotten off more than a few rounds. Somebody had killed them anyway. In the damp ground near the biggest one's body, there was a footprint. It had a P
pebbled pattern to the sole, and when he put his boot next to it, Jesus, he wore a 12, and that print was almost twice as long, and easily twice as wide. Good Lord! The big biker's boot prints were all over. He had to be pushing 300 pounds, and this print was way deeper. How big a man would that be? 7 feet? 400 pounds? Bigfoot, armed with a weapon that punched a fist-sized hole through and through, same size front and back of the body? Loretta, where is that SWAT team?
On the way from Stady Base, 45 minutes ETA. Charlie and Arnie should be there in 10.
Turn our guys around. I don't want them showing up here and getting ambushed. The bikers got slaughtered by somebody with way more firepower than we have. I'm going to move my unit and find a spot to lay low. Tell the Stadius to call me on TAC 3 when they get close.
Copy that, Mac. What is going on out there?
Wish the hell I knew, but it's bad.
Hear that?
He looked at Mary. What?
Listen.
He strained his ears.
Yes. A faint noise behind them, toward their house. Not really close, but not that far away.
I should have gotten those hearing aids, he said.
Remember that you said that later.
If there is a later. They are behind us. Or maybe it's just one. We need to get off trail and hunker down.
They have that stealth gear.
Yeah, but it's not perfect. If you know what to look for, you can see it. My eyes haven't fogged over that much. Come on.
We should proceed with more caution.
For an old Uman and his untrained mate.
Remember the story.
I am Nakande, who has stalked and slain Kiande Ameta in single combat. I am not cowed by a story.
For once, Bagauti kept her silence, which was good, because he was not going to be warned off by his mate in this matter. Two old Umans, one step from the grave? Bah!
They cannot be far, he said. I will spike the male. You can have the female.
Again she held her voice, which was as it should be. Sloan hadn't fired a weapon outside the Tri-County Gun Club in years, and even then, not as often as he should. The beast wasn't a tack driver at distance, but they were only 50 meters off the trail where it narrowed, and he could make that shot blindfolded. He hoped. He slowed his breathing, soft-focused his vision, taking in the trail. His weapon was ready. He was ready. As soon as he fired, Mary would also shoot. All she had to do was line up on the twisted trunk of the little madrone tree and fire, because if he saw the air blur, that's where he was going to take the creature. As soon as they fired, they would roll and scrabble, in case anybody managed to figure out where the shots came from. There was no talking now, no distractions, only waiting. Time passed slowly, slowly.
I see it, he whispered. In 3, 2, now.
He squeezed the trigger, sights lined up on the rippling air in front of the madrone. Mary's Winchester roared. Go! They rolled, heard an unearthly scream, and a bolt of energy blasted the spot 3 meters behind them. Go, go, go! Either they missed, which Sloan didn't think likely, or there was at least one other out there.
Damn!
Vagauti knelt by Nakande. He was still alive, but he wouldn't be for long. He had been hit twice by projectile weapons, rifle pellets, one through the lungs, the other near the hip. His voice was full of fluid.
You were right,
he managed to say before a hard cough racked him. He brought up bright green blood.
I underestimated the Uman.
He coughed again and offered his death rattle, just like that. Gone. She grieved, but only for a moment. She deactivated his self-destruct. At this range, it would kill the Umans, but she wanted to live long enough to do that herself. Yes, indeed. Mac heard the shots, one much louder than the other. Big boom, high-caliber rifles. Who was shooting at whom? There wasn't anybody else out this way, middle of nowhere, except for the senior couple who'd bought the McGee place a few years back. The old boy had guns. Mac had seen him at the range a couple times. Retired forest ranger or something. White hair, skin like old rawhide. He didn't hold out much hope.